Welcome to Polycast, the official podcast of a Poulton Civilization site.
And quick,
Moses Snedis.
And Banner.
Tony Keel.
With guest co-host Oscar Elohim Velzi.
I'm Gabriele Trovato, I'm known as Rai, and I'm a scenario designer for Firaxis Games. And like me, you're listening to Polycast, the official podcast of a Politan Civilization site.
Welcome to Polycast episode 29, with your host Daniel Quick.
Hello.
Me, Tony, Ken Farland, a.k.a. Impaler.
Brilliant.
Wooter, a.k.a. Lucutus.
That's me.
And Elohim.
Hello, everybody.
Have you guys ever worked together on any art stuff? Because I know, like, Tony, you do models, and then Elohim, you do skins. So has there any been an instance where you guys worked something like that? I figured you guys would know each other, kind of.
You know, I think I've seen him in the forums a bit.
Yeah, I saw him too. But I was mostly in the Edu mod. Tony, you were in Road to War, right?
That's correct. I did all the leader heads. I did the map, and I did the artwork for a bunch of unique units.
Did you know that I did the skin for the Hitler leaderhead?
Oh!
With the brown suit and the star and all that.
I think I might know that leaderhead. I guess it's the most popular Hitler leaderhead, right?
Yeah, I did it a long time ago.
You know, I always thought that was a really good job, actually.
Well, thanks.
So, Oscar, how come we don't see that in Road to War? Wait, never mind.
Oh, we can't get into the whole war, what's allowed or what's not allowed. That was a...
Yeah. Not that scan of forums again.
The years just slip by. The Civ versions trickle through the cracks. We'll be 80-year-old men on Polycast playing Civ 37.
In the news, we talk about the new patch for Beyond the Sword that has just been released, and we talk about a preview of Civilization Revolution.
Modcast today, atheism as religion, should we have it or not?
In the center today, we discuss conquering of enemies, do it completely or in little bits at a time, and intercontinental warfare, good, bad, indifferent.
Then another Senate topic from the Vault, a Tri-Wonder discussion, those to bring back from Civ titles before 4, the most improved wonder that first appeared in Civ before and now in Civ 4, and general rules of thumb for building wonders, period.
Today in Mailbag, we had news that Parallels 3 on Max OS X totally runs Civ 4.
News. Civilization 4 Beyond the Sword 3.13 patch has arrived. Woo!
Yay!
Is it shiny?
It is very shiny.
Yeah, it's very good. Apart from all the mandatory fixes, personally I like the inclusion of the new spy advisor screen. It's pretty cool. The other one was big and ugly. I also think that unlimited comparison executives now allowed is a good change too, in order to speed up the rate of corporation spreading. This promotion to ships is a nice addition too. It was proposed. It's a nice change. It's hard to get, but it can make naval combat more dynamic in later eras.
It took a while for the patch to come out, I'd have to say. Once it was finished, I was happy that they took their time. Hopefully you won't need too many more patches is what I think.
Perhaps one more to tie loose ends and it will be done.
Yeah, there's a couple of problems that were introduced in this patch, such as the fact that the cultural symbols no longer show up.
Uh-oh.
Kind of a big deal.
Well, I didn't even notice that. I just played my butt off as the Zulu and got 123,000 points.
I unfortunately haven't been able to play it or any Civ for quite a while now because my Windows is broken. But
I told you to partition, Ken. I told you to partition.
I've got 7 partitions now.
Holy crap.
This patch is a pretty hefty download, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
121 meg. I noticed it was pointed out that under AI fixes, exploring units now heal, applying to player control units as well.
Oh, I did notice that, because I remember for a while they would just keep exploring until they got wasted, but now they're healing again.
I didn't notice.
Well, I just tell my explorers to rest whenever they, like, hit a lion or something, and then when they're healed up again, they hit explore again.
Yeah, it automatically rests them now.
I almost never auto the guys anyway.
Well, the only units I pretty well ever automated were explorers. Scouts.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Explorers are useless, pardon me.
Well, I've noticed that explorers are useful if you use the advanced start and start in a much later era. You always get an explorer or two.
Yeah, but you're just using them in place of the scouts. So you can't even build at that point anymore because they're obsolete, right?
That's correct.
I think that's Tony's point.
So they're only useful when there are no scouts available.
Or perhaps in a Terra map. When you have a Carabao, you put an explorer and you go explore the barbarian continent.
Yeah, it reminded me of the days of Civ 3 with big, undiscovered barbarian swarming continents.
Land of the barbarians. They got railroads that size 26 cities on that continent, you know.
But in Civ 4, the barbarians advance along with the technology, unlike Civ 3, where a tank could clear out dozens of warriors. This Civ 4, the barbarians are building cities, and I noticed in Beyond the Sword that they actually connect them with roads to the other barbarian cities.
Oh, pretty cool.
One change that's been criticized by
LDC,
I'm going to call him LDC from now on, there we go. One change that's been criticized by LDC is that you can't vote on a winner if one team has already had the necessary votes to win with regards to the Apostolic Palace and the United Nations. It says it's fine for the AP, but very bad for the UN. You can no longer end the game with the UN when you've won, but must actually play the game into a domination victory.
That sounds like a pretty big bug.
I have to admit, that is odd.
I normally don't go for diplomatic, but I would be really ticked off.
He also questions why you can no longer make a colony on a continent with an existing colony.
Because the new city would automatically be part of the new colony, wouldn't it? I mean, that's how it goes. It's continent-based.
Believe it or not, his example is, quote, Argentina is not Mexico, and both are on the same continent.
No, they're not.
No, they...
I'm just quoting.
I would dispute that on a number of grounds.
Yes.
We're waiting.
I love the forums.
Time will tell if colony maintenance capped at twice the distance maintenance is enough to satisfy some or many.
I didn't have a problem with the colony maintenance as it was implemented originally. A lot of people were like, oh, but I want my empire to be huge, you know, and it's like, they tamped it down a bit, I guess.
I love colonies. I love colonies and vassals and all the ego stroke. Oh, master, how are you? All that.
That's when happiness, you know.
I have to say there's a fine line in game design with adding restrictions, but if it's done artfully, it can bring a lot of fun to the game, but some games get spoiled by extra restrictions.
So, yes or no, do you like it or not?
I myself haven't had anyone split from me, but I've seen it happen, and it was kind of amusing when it did.
Like to the AIs, when they split off?
Yeah. I saw a whole entire little mini-continent split off the Romans into Byzantiums. It was cool. I crushed them both.
I've seen some AIs do some splits that are frankly way too large, where they almost split the empire right in half, and then they're too weak after that.
Yeah, that's what happened, actually.
It's better when you're just splitting off those little onesies and twosies of cities that are off on some little island. Those are good.
Personally, I split because I hate micromanagement, so, well, you take over that continent and do your thing.
Raise them all!
I always mentioned before that airships now have the Blitz promotion, which we discussed in an earlier episode when we came to a consensus that airships were basically useless, so...
Still useless.
Just like the spiritual trait. Wait, what?
I disagree. If you rush to airships and you have a not too much artillery lying around, that stack of airships is great for defense when their riflemen or whatnot are coming your way, and you can also put a little hurt on their cities if you have some patience. I do feel bad that they don't bombard defenses. Do they still not bombard defenses?
They can only take like 10% off of a unit. That's like too little.
But if you have a stack of four in every city, you're going to be doing quite a bit more.
Now you can do it much, at most 10% each unit in a stack, and you'd have to have as many airships as there are units in the stack. And it's like, well, boy, I could just use like one freaking cannon and do the same amount. Seems to me.
True that, true that.
But they are easy to deploy to another continent.
That is true. And I think the instance I remember using them to effect was on a different continent, on some kind of islandy map, you know?
Yeah, you transport some troops and then capture a city and use the ships, the airships.
I definitely think people talk too much smack about the airships.
Well, I'm one of those smack talkers, because from the moment I saw the airship in the beta, it was like, oh, this unit sucks. And it's continued to suck the whole time.
I'm sorry, what does Alpha Centauri have to do with this?
Mm-hmm.
I
just
don't.
What do you think the likelihood of another patch is?
Well, they will have to fix that display bug that it doesn't display culture and espionage.
Mm.
That'll definitely have to be fixed.
Yeah, that sounds like a must-have.
But hopefully a little patch, just a little update.
Yeah.
Not a huge one.
As far as I know, the only major issue, there's a couple of small things, but nothing really game-breaking.
I'm kind of glad Civilization Revolution is coming out, because I think the console needs more intelligent games. I think the console has this void. If you're not playing a sports game, you gotta be playing a first-person shooter, and if you're not playing a first-person shooter, you're not playing your console. So, there's not hardly any strategy games coming out for console at all, and this is a big deal.
Sports games, racing games, and FPSs, it's pretty much it. And some RPG.
Yeah.
Well, depends on what console you're talking about.
Yeah.
There's a lot of original games for the Wii, and there might not be strategy games, but...
And in PlayStation, you have all the Japanese RPGs and...
Yeah, and they're very big in the adventure and RPG stuff.
This is true.
But not strategy.
No, not strategy.
And no Sims since PS1.
Strategy, you have perhaps like Final Fantasy Tactics and that kind of strategy games.
Not strategy, that's tactics.
Well,
you said it yourself.
Yeah, you're right.
But we're talking about PS1 here. We're at PS3 now.
That's how many? Two additional PSs.
Well, but there are other consoles. There's only the 360 on the PS3, but there are the DS, the PSP, the handhelds. Tactics games are more common there.
Yeah.
Than in the big ones. But there are consoles too.
This is true. I'm just afraid to buy something so little and so expensive, because I have a tendency of losing my wallet sometimes. If I lost my, like, DS, I think I'd punch myself in the face.
So, Tony, where do you tend to lose your wallet, and when do you tend to lose it?
You know, actually, when I'm driving my car, it just falls right out of my pocket.
Oh.
Onto the highway?
Tony has a door in his car.
Just a little duct tape.
You're driving Jeep there with no doors, right?
Personally, I don't dislike Civilization Revolution. I don't know, it seems like playing Civ 1 with updated graphics. Civ 1 was smaller and less dense, and it's kind of, let's go back to the beginning, perhaps. Besides, I always liked flavor in Civ games, and this game has lots of it. I work as a texturer, so I love that kind of stuff. Perhaps I'm not a strategy gamer when I play Civilization, more like a role-playing experience, and, oh, I have my vessels, and they adore me, and, well, not so LARPing. But perhaps I love maps that are more realistic than similar mirrors to continents, very balanced. I don't know. I find them more attractive. I miss the palace screen, for example.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was next time.
Oh, well, you can have that in Civ Rev.
Yeah, and the advisors. They are back too. Civ 4 felt almost like chat. They were not advisors, they were chat screen. It's a good way to introduce Civ into the consoles, and perhaps to experiment new concepts without being tied to the mandate of the main franchise. Try new things that perhaps they can improve the Civ 5, for example.
I definitely agree.
So do I. But you know what, Oscar? My favorite part of what you said is that your vassals love you because they said so. And you believe them? Oh.
Well, sometimes if they have plus 20 in the attitude, they love me. If not, what are you doing here? I thought you were dead already.
There's like a level above pleased, or no, what is it? Neutral, pleased.
Friendly.
Friendly, yes.
I love flavoring Civ. That's why I work in the Edu mod. One thing I like is how the appearance of the units changes with the promotions. It's nifty touch, and I think it's good for gameplay. So you see at a glance what promotions
won't have to click on the guys.
The unit cool. has.
It's like, okay, that's a ninja. That guy's got a giant axe. Yeah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, you said the magic word, Ken. You said ninja. Whoa.
Oh. Mecha leka ha, mecha honey ho.
What?
Don't ask.
Okay, we won't.
What's scary about console games, as far as from the developer's point of view, you can't even patch it after you release it until you release the gold edition. So they better do their...
No, you can now.
These days you can. You have Xbox Live and PS Home and...
Yeah, it's all that online stuff.
Everything can be patched now.
Are you talking about that newfangled internet thing?
Yes, the tube.
Preview of Civilization Revolution. Now, admittedly, it's a little dated, August 28th, you know, relative to when we're talking about it, but really, you know how shiny it is? It's not shiny at all, and it never has been. Yeah.
Ooh, burn.
I'm afraid if my shininess factor could go into the negative, that would be when I would apply it here.
Yeah, anti-shininess.
Yes, anti-shininess. Has anyone else read this preview?
Yeah,
I read it, but I'm trying to forget it, so...
I understand why. Poor Eliza, I have to say. I don't even know where to begin. One thing she finds iffy with Civ Rev is, will old-school strategy lovers appreciate its oversimplified mechanics?
Ooh.
And further citing Civ Rev as Cid's new installment in the Civilization series. But this title is not being targeted to old-school strategy lovers there, Eliza.
Yeah, it's
yeah, it would be Civ 5.
Yeah, it's specifically not got a number to kind of set it away from the 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe a 5 eventually series that they're doing. So it's like, okay, this is very off the beaten path, kind of like Call to Power, right?
Yeah.
I don't think this game is really expected to be picked up, let alone targeted to PC civers. If those playing on the PC happen to be a console gamer already, perhaps they will pick up Civ Rev, but that's not who this title is for. They are trying to bring a new audience into the extended Civilization family, and that's those people that choose to game only on the consoles or primarily on consoles.
Another thing, she used the word simplified. Ooh.
Yeah, that's a no-no, Eliza. Ooh. There are several S words that you just don't use, such as... That'll be bleeped. And September, that's another bad word.
Definitely.
It's not simplified, it is streamlined. To use simple implies dumbed down or watered down, if we want to be not quite so nasty.
We would never say that about console players.
Not on this show.
I'm being so rude today. What's wrong with me?
You're on Polycast.
Oh!
Liza is also wrong when she says that Civ Rev is designed for the PS3 and Xbox 360 only. Oh, Eliza. Oh,
no.
You know, it's bad enough you leave off the Wii, but, you know, admittedly, it's coming in next fall and not next spring like the PS3 and 360, so okay. But she's forgetting the Nintendo DS.
Yeah, I think the DS is scheduled for the same initial release with the Xbox and the 360, right?
Exactly. That's what's really sad. Come on, Eliza.
You know, I was thinking about getting a DS. That would be kind of cool to be able to zip around and get your Civ fixed.
Until you drop it out of your car.
Yeah.
Tony gets into an accident. Cop pulls him over. So, sir, are you on the cell phone? No. You combing your hair, checking your makeup, perhaps? What? No. No, I was playing a handheld game.
Hold on, sir. Just one more turn. Just one more turn before you arrest me.
We're going to have to take that into evidence, so, you know. Okay.
I was just about to crash the romance. Damn it. Then I crashed the car.
Yes. Though, I think we need to give Eliza some slack, because when she writes passages such as, for the first time in the series, players can choose the Egyptians,
What?
What the hell?
It is hard not to feel pity. It's hard not to feel pity that she may truly, in fact, have no idea what she is talking about.
And it says their distinctive trait are the pyramids.
It doesn't sound like she's ever played Civ.
And we could also nitpick, but we're not going to nitpick, that it's probably better to cite Civ Rev as a sibling to Civ, as opposed to a descendant.
Yeah.
Given that, if Civ Rev is a sibling to Civ, and I think that's fair to say, that really doesn't constitute a series until there's really more than one title in it, is there? But we're not going to nitpick about that, because she has enough problems.
I just hope they don't call it Civ 5 when it comes out.
No, what's going to happen, Tony, is there's going to be the Civ Rev patch for Civ 4, and see, Barry and Dorian told us all about it.
You're scaring me right now. Don't scare me. I sometimes dread patches, and I know that would be a big one.
Now, fortunately, more for her readers than herself, Eliza does fill us in on some new information, though even some of it is muddled. Controls, we know that the left analog stick is now used to pick an action, and another button confirms it. She specifically talks about the Xbox 360 and the PS3. Why didn't you mention the DS or Wii? Oh, that's right, Civ Rev isn't coming out on those platforms. I forgot.
According to her.
According to her. Overrun feature addressed. Tanks and other heavy vehicles can be used to overrun troops without it costing extra turns.
I hope it shows them getting run over.
Oh, that would be sweet. Squish, squish, squish.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's Command and Conquer style.
And then you realize you're playing the Canadian Civ, and after their tank rolls over some guy, they're like, sorry. Spy units can bribe generals and destroy city fortifications.
Nice.
Interesting.
Sounds like they're going to bring some of the espionage we saw in Beyond the Sword.
Yeah, I guess there is going to be some espionage elements. I know there are great people in the game. I don't know if it's been specifically said if there's going to be a great spy that Beyond the Sword brought about, but there's going to be spy units anyway.
Yeah, there will be great people. In the cultural victory condition requires you to have a certain number of great people.
Oh, yeah, I know great people were in there. I just wondered if great spies were specifically going to be in there.
Ah, well, I don't know either.
Multiplayer games can be paused and resumed later. Though this previewer says that they can last a long time, somewhere between 2 and 4 hours.
So long.
That's barely long enough for recording a podcast that in post-production is an hour, let alone a game where we're playing across, you know, more than 6 millennia. But that's okay. It's okay, Eliza. She says special buildings, too, are unlocked and set automatically, but each of them is only available for one civilization to use. If Mongolians build pyramids, Egyptians can't have them.
That's a wonder, not a unique
concept. She brought up wonders.
These special buildings you refer to, we believe they're called Wonders of the World, Eliza, but you might want to double check on that.
Which brings up the question whether they have, in fact, the Civilization IV style unique buildings or not.
Exactly, because when you refer to something as available for one civilization to use, based on that description, I'm thinking unique buildings.
Yes, so
that's what I thought,
yeah.
How confused can you be in just one article? Apparently, Eliza's showing us. Well, Eliza, we're looking forward to your next preview or your review, which may be longer than the 700-word write-up, because then we'll have that much more to criticize.
Burn.
Got news? Email news at apolton.net or send a private message to Dan Q, Locutus, Snoopy369, Alexander I, or Luminatus via Apolton's forums at apolton.net/forums.
Shall we move to the modcast now?
Okay.
Welcome to the modcast, where we talk about various hot topics on all the different forums to talk about Civ.
Atheism as religion? ?
No.
This has been brought up so many times by so many people.
Is this a controversial topic? I'm not sure.
Just a little.
Yeah, actually it is.
No, is it? Oh, okay. I thought I'd get confirmation on that.
first off, why would we want to depict atheism as a religion? Now, I understand some atheists are very adamant about their beliefs, but do they have an icon? Do they have a holy city? Do they have the necessary elements to differentiate them from being free religion to atheism?
Well, free religion is a civic, which just implies that everyone has freedom of religion, whereas people are proposing here that this would be another little religion like the seven we already have, and there'd be an icon for it, and all those other things. Yeah, I get it. It's kind of silly when you come into, like, the holy city factors and all those other things.
And who's going to be the missionary? Richard Dawkins?
And then Richard Dawkins Jr., Richard Dawkins III, Richard Dawkins. Just like Laser 1, Laser 2, Laser... Oh, wait, that's another...
Nice.
What I would like to see is one of the Eastern religions ditch in favor for a Mediterranean polytheism religion, perhaps. There are too many Eastern ones, and their Roman and their Greeks religion or Egyptian religion are not covered.
Well, you know, you should try the 47 different religions mod that someone made a while back.
Wow.
I think that had just about everything in it.
So are you talking about like a unique religion per civ, like a unique unit, but instead a religion?
No. Just each one of the Eastern ones that we have, Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, Confucianism, and there are four of them that are the Eastern, and we don't have one that covers the classic Mediterranean ones.
Yeah, so you would advocate having more than the seven religions we have to encompass those?
Or each one of the Eastern ones.
Yeah, we don't have any religions that cover Africa either, or any of the Americas.
This is true.
So a lot of parts of the world and a lot of parts of history are missing. Problem is, how many religions do you want to add? Because 47 is a little too much, if you ask me.
Yeah.
I think even in 12, in most cases, is way too much. In most games, you play with maybe 10 opponents. If you have more than one religion per civ, that kind of defeats the purpose. The whole point of religion is that they're fairly rare.
And if you try to go into, okay, well, we're still going to have seven religions, but let's replace some with some others, that's going to be problematic on another front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they took the seven religions that are today the largest ones, well, except for Judaism, but I guess there are other reasons to include that, which I guess is a reasonable argument. Of course, what are the largest ones today weren't necessarily the largest ones 100 years ago, or let alone 2,000 years ago, but whatever, it's a argument.
Yeah, I could see it as something where there's a lot of religions there, but then only like seven ones are randomly selected to be in the game, or when you found a religion, you can just arbitrarily pick the little icon you want and its name, but it's still seven religions in the game.
Yeah, and with the way in Beyond the Sword can now choose religions, now you could say, okay, we add 20 or 30 more religions, that's perfectly fine. Only you still have to restrict it to, say, 5 to 7... In one game, or maybe up to 10 for very large maps or something like that.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
But atheism as a religion?
No.
I think that defeats the purpose.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
That's silly. It's silly to implement, and it doesn't make sense. For one thing, at what point in history was there ever an atheist civ?
Well, if we want to start talking about the commies...
Communism is sort of atheist, but communism is really sort of a religion in its own right, more an ideology, but communism is closer to the religion of the Soviet Union than atheism was.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, other than that, I can't really think of any examples.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, though, from the numbers perspective, there are far, far more atheists than there are, say, Jews or some of the other minor religions that have been included in demos and patches and mods and things like this that people have made. I'm sure half of those 47 religions, they've included, you know, some really obscure stuff there that probably doesn't even exist anymore, like the Norse mythology. I mean, but if you look at numbers now, I'm not sure what the actual numbers are. You might get like 10% of people in the U.S. and probably higher in Europe and other parts of the world who are atheists. It just is a demographic angle.
Well, it depends how you measure it, of course. I mean, over the course of history, millions and millions of people have believed in the Norse religion and in the Roman pantheon, etc., etc. Even today, atheism is really not that big of an ideology. It's parts of Europe, parts of North America, but outside of that, most of the world is fairly religious, even today. And in the past, it was almost unheard of.
I agree.
So it's not even all that big.
I look at atheism as a personal choice that a person can make. I don't look at it as something that should be organized. I mean, they do organize, but I don't think they're going to organize and have a church and have bake sales.
Yeah.
In a sense, atheism is already in the game because Buddhism is not a religion. It's not a belief in a god. Buddhists don't believe in a god for the most part. And the same thing for Confucianism. It's really just a matter of what kind of label you want to stick on things.
Technically, non-deist-based religions can still be religions. I think by the standard they use of simply people who self-identify themselves as, you know, oh, I practice Buddhism, or I practice this, and that's what they go by when they actually say, you know, what you belong to. Most studies are done simply by self-identification demographically, you know. You just go up to the guy on the street and say, do you identify with any of these particular religions, etc.?
Oh, that means I'm a Jedi.
Yeah, yeah, I put Jedi on one of my records, too, when I got asked. That was...
In this thread, Giorgio P. suggests, just make the environmentalism civic a religion instead. It's close to the same thing. Oh, boy.
Tree huggers.
And Good Samaritan, he's also pushing, just like Maverick 667, who started this, who wants to see atheism as a religion in Civ, where he would lose all happiness and culture benefits from religious buildings and get a negative diplo modifier with all Civs, and maybe give your enemy shrines no money from your cities, and keep foreign culture out of your city's fat cross, and sure to stop spreading religions in your cities like theocracy.
Why would anyone ever want to run that?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Could you give me plus 50% science, perhaps? I'd run to that.
What he says is that you would convert GP, great profit points, into plus one hammer, gold, and commerce per specialist, and avoid the great profits in the process. So all your great people points are converted to plus one hammer, gold, and science per specialist. And, of course, we're now assuming that even if we assume that we wanted to put atheism in the game, I think we all agree that no, even if we did, how the heck could you possibly do that? These suggestions, as we can see, are quite problematic.
Oh, yeah.
There are also those that have said that they see atheism in the game already. They see atheism as paganism, or either a replacement for paganism or another name for paganism. And
that's silly.
I find that even sillier.
No.
I know a few pagans, actually.
I believe they put paganism as one of those 47 religions on the mod, called it Wicca, I believe. They have a technical name for it.
You mentioned before, earlier on, about the free religion, religious civic. I think that well balances the realism, the gameplay mechanics, and the understandable sensitivities surrounding this issue, as it represents the absence of a state religion in the game. Because this thread very quickly descended at times into discussions about what is and what is not atheism, and do you define atheism on its own or as comparison to those that follow a particular religion, and it went quite off topic from how you would or would not put atheism into the game. But again, understandable.
Now, of course, I define atheism as...
Because, as Wouter had mentioned, over the years, we've had many people that would identify themselves as atheists. So atheism surely exists even where there is an adopted state religion, just as there are followers of religion that are not the state religion, even when there's a state religion in place. Now, we said, you know, as a civic in Civ 4, free religion acts as a formal government position not to adopt a state religion and formally allow its citizens, subjects, or what have you, you know, depending upon what your government civic of choice is, to follow whatever religion you want to or none at all.
Yeah,
and even before then, you can simply choose not to have a state religion. I guess you could see that as atheism.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or you could be like me and not be good enough to catch any religions.
Oh, Tony, I don't think we have enough time on this show to help you on that front. And
shall we move to the Senate?
Welcome to the Senate. In this section, we talk about game strategy.
Conquering enemies completely or in degrees. Chode Node is wondering... He's wondering if his war strategy is all wrong. He typically stays at war until the enemy is wiped out, but is starting to see now why it takes me forever to win a game this way, quote-unquote. So, given this, he's looking for some helpful suggestions on, quote, when you should sue for peace and rebuild before dropping the hammer again, unquote. Now, I think we're assuming that this person is referring to wars that they've already started, but not necessarily so. But in any event, what can we say to this poor soul?
You know, as a warmonger in a lot of my games, I've tried the tactic of suing for peace for a little bit of breathing space, but I've noticed that if you're going to go to war, you've got to stick to it, because if you don't take them out quick enough, they're going to have, for instance, longbows, or in later games, tanks. If you don't crush them early, crush them like bugs.
Well, and certainly if you're winning, there's no point in having peace and then allow them the opportunity to rebuild. That's just crazy.
Your closest neighbors, you definitely want to take out completely as fast as possible. But if a civ's a little further away, yeah, you're probably, best you can do is raise their cities, and you're not going to be able to keep them in an early game. You can keep warring on forever and ever, but at some point your war weariness is going through the roof and your economy is suffering. So, yeah, you do want to sue for peace at some point.
Sometimes you are hitting a standstill in a war. Perhaps he has fortified a lot of archers or longbows in his cities, and perhaps you can break through his defenses and it's taking a long time. Perhaps you can sue for peace there and try to see if they break up a little the defenses to attack again. That's a moment perhaps you can sue for peace. Another time is when you, for example, your enemy has a tech that you don't have, and if you kill him, you don't get the tech, so you're about to kill him, sue for peace, get the tech, and then kill him and destroy him completely.
Yeah, it's good to sue for peace. If you're going to sue for peace in a warmonger game, you better sue for peace while you still have somewhat of a military advantage. If you are put at a standstill by perhaps longbowmen, if you're in an ancient war, I know that that game is not going to go very well once they attack you.
Yeah, but once you're at peace, you can, of course, start focusing more on your economy and get some technologies yourself.
The problem with that, I've noticed, is if you try to switch your economy over and try to build the improvements, they're already ahead of you in tech. They get even further ahead, and it then becomes a downward spiral, and I just usually quit the game.
Well, okay, if you only build military units, then, yeah, you're going to have a problem once you let them out-tech you. But I usually have maybe one or two cities building units, and the rest is still also building some improvements and stuff like that. I don't want to fall behind entirely.
True that.
Yeah, as a builder, I'll usually try to do small bites at first when I have to go to wars, and the same way I'll usually only have a portion of my empire committed to troop production, and the rest is just building. And when I've got good tech advantage and I actually go to have the war, and I try to do it quick, try to take a little bit, try to go right back into peace, and even if during the war I don't ever put everything into the military, and then when I get later in the game when I'm really starting to roll, then I can afford to start really gobbling people up nonstop when my technology is rolling ahead and my industry is really strong.
That's a good strategy too.
Small bites, then progressively bigger bites is basically how I do it.
And when you're looking at the smaller bites, you want to be generally targeting and taking a few key cities that you're interested in and that will benefit you. If there's a city that's going to benefit you but it's stuck in the middle of your enemy's empire, well, you don't want to keep those, but you might want to take a few key cities that you're interested in and then propose peace as soon as your enemy will listen. And I'm, of course, assuming the later game here, you know, it's a little faster and we're spread out a little more. You then go back to a builder or a rebuilder phase during which you prepare for the next war, which you could either be starting or drawn into. You never know. Because now you need time to digest the cities you've captured. And as Wetter said, I would never switch totally to military unit production. I would have my more developed cities building units, plus the likelihood that they're going to have barracks or stables or what have you, a need for some nice promotions at the start. And any of these newly captured cities I'm using to build either cultural improvements to help out border considerations as well as defenses. And I'm moving in as many military units as I can and as reasonable to quell the rebellion in your newly captured city so you can actually start building these culture and defense adding buildings. Raise them! Well, indeed, you got to make the decision when you capture a city. Is your goal to raise them so you can get to another city that you want, or just keep on raising? Or are you actually going to want some cities that you're going to want to keep for yourself and then build up? So, for example, you can use that as a launching point and a place for some units perhaps to go back and heal more quickly, that kind of thing.
Never raise the pyramids. I've done it.
Never raise any wonders.
Oh, well, in the Oracle, you can raise that.
Points! It'll only take that city 500 turns at that rate to produce a great person.
Oh, gosh.
Comes to defensiveness during and preparation for war, just as kind of an extension here. I find myself doing as Thaddeus says he does, defending your border cities very well and keeping a couple of defenders in your inside cities, you know, one to kill surprise pillagers and a second to defend the city. As he said, although I think if you've also got cities on the coast, you may want some strong ship units around, either in the city itself or surrounding the tiles that have access to the city for further defense, as well as later in the game, when you've got to start protecting your skies, you're going to want some fighters or then jet fighters, or even before that, some SAM infantry to be able to protect you from above.
Yep, definitely. I've seen one guy who his strategy was to put a unit on every single square of coastline so that no one could just hop in and pillage and take their back cities. They had to attack any beach. It was bizarre, but it was cool.
The Normandy defense.
That sounds expensive.
Yeah, I've done that on occasion, but that requires quite a large empire and quite a well-managed one. That's nice, especially if you have a very large body of to protect, which would probably be the case if you had a large empire, but maybe that's more obtainable on a lower difficulty level, generally speaking.
Yeah, he does play on lower difficulties.
They could also maybe do the same thing where they're protecting their border with their land with army units on all tiles to, again, force people in again. I've done that before, but I've generally done that with smaller empires and on lower difficulty levels, so I wouldn't say that's a general recommendation to go for. Yay, my borders are defended! Wait a minute, how come I've got minus 30, 40, 50 in my treasury? Oh no. What's going on?
Even if you can pull it off financially, it's not really the most efficient use of forces.
Yeah.
Screw finance.
The Great Wall of Forts, perhaps, looks cool too.
Take those units in and concentrate them on the immediate tiles around your city. Maybe you'd want a few, for example, submarines a little farther out from your coast to help you spot enemies coming in. But yeah, other than the cool factor, that guy's so cool, I can't attack him.
Hey, wait, where are his units going? Oh, they're on strike.
I wonder if I can bribe them more easily now.
But one thing you should consider is that these guidelines only apply to Civ 4 because in earlier series titles, hammers were known as shields. You see, Chode Node wanted to know when he should shoot for peace and rebuild before dropping the hammer again. Yeah, I know that's bad.
Yeah. That's a pun, I think.
Let's continue, please.
It's Dan original.
Yeah.
Speaking of warfare, then, intercontinental warfare.
Oh.
JAG 2K2. Plane sucks at invading countries that are across the sea. He says so himself. I'm not insulting him. He's insulting himself. He's now playing at Monarch level, and his strategies on intercontinental warfare have gone from, as he says, quote-unquote, trouble to flat and effective. I almost would maybe put those the other way around, but anyway. A future hermit says you need many more units than you think because it's going to take so long to send reinforcements, and it's also helpful to pick your targets wisely. It's always easier to invade a backwards country, absolutely, whether you're talking about intercontinental warfare or not. So perhaps invade with maybe 25 to 50% more units than you think you need and don't want overkill, but you don't want to get caught short, especially if you're really serious about this invasion. If this is an invasion of annoyance, 20 to 50% more based on your opponent's empire size, and I think you want those units that are at par or above their technology level, which again ties into picking your targets wisely.
I've noticed that a second continent, if it's just a small Greenland-sized continent with one civ, is typically very backwards and can be easily taken.
Yeah.
But if you're attacking, like, the New World to the Old World, where they've been at war for, you know, millennia and have technology spread, you better wait till you have ICBMs and just nuke the crap out of the place. Just take the radioactive wasteland as your wonderful new home.
Marching unopposed across the fields of skulls.
I'm so evil sometimes. Oh, God.
The skulls just go crunch, 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 crunch into your tank. It's like...
Oh, great.
Nothing but skulls. It's like, the people here, they didn't have any bones in the rest of their body. They just had skulls, you know?
Da-dun, dun, da-dun. Oh, da-dun, dun, da-dun.
And I thought I was scary. And... You might want to take one or two decent sized and reasonably defendable cities on the coast that is easy for you to access from your homeland, main homeland or another one, and hold it until you can get a peace treaty. Of course, you want to be able to hold it, because if you capture it and then they're able, the enemy's able to take it back in a short amount of time, I'm not sure they're going to really be interested in peace. Stockpile units until you're comfortable to go to war again now that you have a base of operation on the new continent.
Use diplomacy well. Make sure that two civs go to war with each other that are on the continent that you want to invade, and then attack far away from the line of combat. That's probably where the defenses will be weak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
Sneaky. I like it.
Perhaps you can do two invasions, one very weak, but very defendable, perhaps in a hill with hill promotion units. And the thieves try to focus on the units that you brought there. They move all the units there, and perhaps you can have a second wave of attack from the back. That could be a strategy too.
Oh, and always keep plenty of galleons or transports. That's one thing you got to remember.
You have to make sure that they're well protected now, especially post Beyond the Sword.
Yeah.
If you've got frigates or other ones that can bombard without worrying about a counterattack from land, ooh.
Yep.
And one idea that I hadn't thought of until I read it, so I'm going to try this. You can use units if you have the amphibious promotion, so you can attack directly from the ship and not be counterattacked. Isn't there a unit that starts with amphibious? Which one is that?
Marines.
The Berserker, I think.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
The Berserker. That goes right along with the whole theme of what the Vikings, I think it is.
Yeah. Or if you've got random civs, then you might end up with Berserkers and somebody else, but yeah. Berserkers.
Oh, yeah, true that.
Berserkers.
I don't particularly like the Berserkers because they come too early for Continental War, but too late to be useful in Ancient War, which I was a little upset with, but...
That's the sound of none of us disagreeing.
Yes.
I guess it depends on the map type. If you play on an archipelago...
Archipelago.
Archipelago.
Whatever. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, true that, true that.
Yeah, it's rather situational. That's definitely true.
Mad Scientist says, bring mounted or armored units, of course, depending upon the stage of the game, to more aggressively attack the countryside. Oh, yes, pillage. Pillage, pillage improvements. He also says your army should not be predominantly siege weapons, but you should have a decent amount of them, particularly in the later games, so you can soften defenses and defenders.
I've found that siege weapons, even if you have, like, some really super upgraded swordsmen or whatnot, or, you know, a city attack, you can keep them alive, you need a constant flow of siege weapons, because to soften defenses usually means you have to sacrifice one or more siege weapons.
Oh, definitely.
Yep.
Yeah, they tried to do a lot to improve that now with the changes they made to catapults and siege weapons, the way they work, so they're not so suicidal.
They need a higher a withdrawal rate, because if you send them against a very superior defender, that withdrawal rate is reduced to nothing by simply the ratios.
I think, how does the withdrawal work again? It's the percentage chance that on the next hit, that if they're going to be hit, they withdraw. So I didn't think it actually was affected by how likely they are to lose the battle overall.
I've had them, if I'm hitting a walled city with longbowmen with city defense, that I rarely expect to get them back.
Yeah, well, I think that's because they would almost otherwise be killed.
They're pretty powerful units, so...
Yeah, that's true. They are powerful.
Because I think what you're looking at is it's only in the situations where the catapult would have died in the attack that the withdrawal has an effect. If it was going to win half the time anyway, then you end up losing them half as much. You see what I mean?
But what's ridiculous about attacking a walled city with a catapult and then the catapult dying is to destroy catapults, you would have to have a sally, and a sally itself can be defended upon, which, I don't know, I'm just nitpicking, so who knows.
Yeah, okay, historically it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but the whole siege concept doesn't make all that much sense in Civ.
Yeah, well.
But from a gameplay point of view, it works pretty well.
Yeah, I agree. I fear nothing more than a huge stack of catapults at this point.
Yeah.
Okay.
What was the original topic again?
Who knows?
Intercontinental warfare, Ken.
Yeah, I don't really do it very much because I'm mostly a Pangea guy myself.
In other words, Jag2K2, Ken just says he is above your measly problems.
Far above.
That's cold, man. That's cold. I like your style. Wait, what?
I am far above your measly compliment, Ken.
Polyton University.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We do have that.
If people do want to learn how to play a Civ better, there is a good way for competitive playing to have other people give you advice. That's the Polyton University.
And we would find that where? Jeez.
Polyton.net.
Really?
Forums?
Wow. How can I figure that
out? I don't know.
Polyton University. Sometimes I wonder. From episode 11 with Dan Q, Locutus, Makalua, and Blake Walsh, recorded on March 17th, 2007. Very briefly, because I like making lists. I also, in thinking about the best and the worst, what about some wonders that would be beneficial from some modifications or even bringing them back, as seen in previous Civ titles? Now, with the pyramids, if it could act as a granary and every city on the continent is built...
I know. I know that one people probably miss a lot is Leonardo's workshop.
Indeed.
I want that one back.
One. Snake was manufacturing. Cheaper upgrades. Oh, you were free upgrades in the Civ 2.
Yeah, but even cheaper upgrades would help in this game.
Yeah.
I don't know there are comparable ones, but I would like to see the cure for cancer come back. One unhappy citizen content in all of your cities? Oh. I have one final. It's not so much of a list, but it's a bit of an award. It's the most improved wonder from Civilization 3 to Civilization 4. That goes to the Hanging Gardens.
What did they do in Civ 3? I didn't play it much.
In Civilization 3, it makes three unhappy citizens content in its city and one unhappy citizen content in your other cities, but it also expires and expired with steam power. Whereas now, of course, in Civ 4, no expiry, and when you think about the variety of benefits that the Hanging Garden brings, no other wonder is so diversified.
Right.
Plus one health, plus one population in all cities, plus six culture, and plus two engineer great people points.
Yeah.
Oh.
Even without the great people points, it's still pretty nice.
The other thing is so easy to get.
Yeah, it's fairly early, and if you have stone, it's really cheap.
And AI doesn't bother getting it because it's a network requirement.
Yes. Yeah, it goes, what's this for? I don't need health and stuff.
So, I think we could summarize this perhaps with three general rules of thumb. Be selective in what wonders you build, regardless of age or circumstance, but I don't think you should be bypassing early wonders entirely in favor of early wars that you initiate or choose to escalate. Gotta have balance. Balance is important. Second general rule of thumb is related in part to great people production. The earlier you build wonders, particularly those that are poised to become obsolete, the longer you can reap the benefits of them and recoup their cost. And finally, it's related to the second. Third general rule of thumb is what age you start your game at, because of course, if you start your game later than classical, the list that I provided to you might be a little shorter.
If you start on industrial, it's going to be really short.
My rule of thumb for wonders is you only build the ones you have the resources for. Don't build expensive ones.
The pyramids.
They're far enough out that you have time to hook up the stone, unlike Stonehenge, which you just usually build from scratch.
Mailbag, thank you, Imran. I'm missing that.
Hey, Polycast, it's Michael Lucas-Smith from Australia here again. I just thought you might like to know that the latest version of Parallels 3 on Mac OS X actually runs Civ 4. You don't have to use Boot Camp anymore. Cheers.
I have no idea what that means, but that's cool.
I wish Imran was here to insult Mac users. That would be so great.
Well, that's cool for him and Mac users.
I actually did a little bit of research, since I also had no idea what was being talked about. There is the latest version of Parallels, Michael mentions Parallels 3, referring to Parallels Desktop 3, which, according to the official website, Parallels.com, brings a world of Windows-only key productivity and entertainment software to Mac users for the first time.
So it's a Windows emulator, basically.
Yes, and before you had to use Boot Camp, but for reasons that I didn't quite gleam enough, most people think Parallels 3 is a little shinier than Boot Camp, or Parallels 3, for whatever reason, has greater proliferation, some combination thereof. There is a list on the Parallels website of games and applications that have been tested to work on Parallels Desktop 3. Some of these are older titles. Civilization 4 is not listed, but it does include Alien Arena 2007, which was released this June, Duke Nukem Manhattan Project, Neverending Nights, Warcraft 3, though they only require DirectX 8.1, whereas Civ 4 we need, I believe it's 9.0C or 9.0-something. There's also Far Cry and Unreal Tournament 2004, released in 2004, and Homeworld 2 in 2003, which requires 9.0B. But there was a post on one of the forums that I found discussing it, and they said that they were able to get Civilization 4 to run on version 3. Because there was criticism, Parallels says it supports DirectX 8. And then people said, look, a lot of the modern games, they require DirectX 9 or even moving into DirectX 10. And so Civilization 4, along with Supreme Commander, Oblivion, and Company Heroes, were titles that were being commented on frequently. And unfortunately, at this point, this person who has said that they've been able to get Civ 4 to run on their Mac really wasn't very specific about it. Someone, people have asked, what is Mac hardware you are running? What's the performance like? What graphics settings are you using? Are you able to compare it to the Mac version of Civ 4 running on the same machine? So yeah, there we go, we're talking about Beyond the Sword. So perhaps, Michael, you'll phone back into the show and give us some more particulars on how, because this seems to be a very recent phenomenon. I wonder if it's maybe with a patch that was associated with version 3, because the forum threads I saw that were discussing it, and this person specifically mentioned Civ 4 working, was actually posted earlier this month in October here. But that's good.
Yeah.
So, yay for Mac users, I guess. So.
Yay.
I want to see a Linux version, damn it.
Yeah, right.
Oh, go play Call to Power. And
that's not a bad idea.
Wow.
It's true. Yeah, we got mail.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-659, 301-637-PAULING.
For Europe, 44-020-7871-7659, 44-020-7871-POLY.
Or you can Skype us at the Polycast.
Seriously, where is the hate mail address?
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on the show, log on to the official Polycast website at polycast.apolton.net. Type more quietly.
Yeah, damn. Seriously.
How does that?
That's what my freaking keyboard makes, damn it.
How do you say this name? Bodega. Bodega.
I think it's Bodega. I think you're saying it right.
Cool.
I have to say, they definitely very greatly endowed that leaderhead model. That's for sure.
Now we have in Revolution, who was Cleopatra?
Oh, gosh. She looked nearly naked.
The good thing is that we can play the Egyptians for the first time.
Never even heard of the Egyptians before. Who are they?
So, Oscar, have you listened to any previous Polycasts? If so, what did you like, dislike?
Well, actually, I heard about Polycasts about 2 weeks ago from you in Civilization Fanatics Forum. And heard part of some programs, especially the ones Rai was talking, because I know him of Rise and Fall of Civilization and all that, and I wanted to hear his voice. And also the one with Dorian and Barry. But I'm pretty new, and it was fun, because I learned about it a few weeks ago, and, well, and now I was invited as a co-host, and it was pretty much an honor.
Oh, that's very nice. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Would you ever agree to do this again?
Yeah, sure. It was fun.
You have been listening to episode 29 of Polycast, the official podcast of a Bolton Civilization site. I've been joined by Wouter Snyders, known as Locutus.
Bye.
I've also been joined by Kenneth Furland, known as Impaler WRG.
Yep.
Tony Keel, who goes by Garrett Sidzaka.
Bye-bye.
And our special guest co-host, Oscar Velzi, who goes by Elohim.
Exactly.
Yes, and now is when you say goodbye, either Oscar.
Well, goodbye.
There you go. Record date October 13th, 2007. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization 4 Warlords and Beyond the Sword. Copyright 2007, a Bolton Civilization site at bolton.net.